So what we did is that we used 50 grams of banana samples, and we used ethanol to actually extract the brown color. And we did a spectrophotometric method, and so it doesn't have the unit. It's just based on the adsorbance. It just give us the scale, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. So I would like to have more questions, but I can do it after this session in the hallway. So I will invite the next presenters. And thank you for your attention.
I'm going to set my timer. Thank you, Mahalas. Appreciate your time. And since we're going over a little bit, I'm going to go really fast, okay? All right, so here's the title of the talk. Bringing up some of my older work, so I might not have all my literature up to date anymore, and maybe some of you can correct me. I'd appreciate that. As you probably are all aware, the blueberries have become kind of the super fruit and the star of the marketing and health buzz industry over the last 10 years. And that's been proven by a lot of the literature going back many years, showing that a lot of this is due to the polyphenolics, anthocyanins, and the differences in the different antioxidant capacities, and some of which has been proven also in vivo, in vitro. And basically what it's done is allowed more opportunities in certain areas in the Southeast, for example, where we are in Louisiana, to use local fruit, and that's a good thing. So you see the market shelves these days, the functional beverages and juices. The majority by far these days are refrigerated section are all these highly colored and pigmented products because it is a marketing bonanza, and it's working well, and we're happy about that. And with no need to go into all these numbers, they're a little old, they should be updated, but the Southeast production is just booming now, especially in Florida, with the myriad of southern high bush blueberry varieties that are now available for the low chill requirement. So it's a win-win situation for the industry. So what I want to look at today is one of our publications in 2015 dealt with blueberries. However, because that was a sensory-based publication and the direction therein was using human subjects, those fruit had to be handled markedly different than we handled everything else in our lab for producing juice and analyzing the crops. So the methods employed therein were rather unique due to thawing, washing the fruit, and then handling them for sensory. So all the other methods derived in our lab were basically trying to do the most streamlined pilot plant juice production we could do with the minimal input, and minimal input is only $250,000-ish versus commercial plants of over millions. So you'll see some of the equipment in a minute. But that begs the question then always in fruit, what is the best fruit? Well, with these critters that have a lot of color and pigment, most traditional post-harvest, whatnot, you're talking about an acid-to-sweetness ratio. You're talking about the pH. You're talking about seasonality differences, tree-to-tree variation, year-to-year, harvest-to-harvest. Well, you have to involve these intricacies in these fruit, especially in the high phenolic-containing commodities of those anthocyanins and polyphenolics, which are also known to have very complicated bitterness, astringency, and additional sourness components that can be carried and conveyed forward or in the raw eaten fruit as well. So we've collected a myriad of data, and some of that is also published in another paper of the actual not-from-concentrate blueberry juices that we produced in the pilot plant. And what we're doing now is we're going back and reevaluating, trying to combine a lot of these data sets from the two different kind of avenues and approaches of looking at this, and we're going to show some of that today. So we're going to look at the differences in the small-scale hydraulic or pilot plant-pressed materials versus the ones that were done for sensory and already reported, and predominantly focus on six locally produced southern highbush varieties. And then actually three of those are technically called rabbit eye, which predate the southern highbush varieties. And I'll get into a little bit more about that in a minute, and show a little bit more additional literature. Now, this is Daddy's favorite picture because one of those little sweethearts is mine. So there they are picking the fruits and helping Daddy out in the field get the crop. But then the majority of these, though, really came from our commercial-like ag experiment station in Poplarville, Mississippi. So what we did, we looked at three Rabbit Eye, Alapaha, Columbus, Montgomery, three Southern High Bush, Biloxi, Magnolia, and Misty, a couple of harvests during the season, and then a different study looking at Tiff Blue, which is another Rabbit Eye, and then basically I've already said a different pressing based on muslin or the more hydraulic and or pilot plant pressing based upon nylon press. What we did is steam jacket kettle. We follow these with pectinase enzyme, hydraulic pressing, and then we also get the press cake and we analyze different components, which we have not published a lot of the data. So this is just a real quick of what the ultrafiltration skid unit looks like, which is the next best thing to commercial. Hot fill done on this microthermics pasteurization unit, which is probably the best state-of-the-art you'll see in any research lab in the nation. And the resulting not from concentrate clarified and unclarified blueberry juices. And we do a slew of the normal post-harvest type parameters for quality or, you know, just general hedonic. We then hydrolyze and analyze the anthocyanidins by UPLC, strip the sugars off and quantify in the backbones, five common ones in blueberry. We do then freeze-dried samples as well, organic acids by HPLC, total phenolics measured by the Foehling-Siokatal, and then the headspace SPEME method that's pretty standard in my lab. It's been done for years and years and years. And then we also did SPEME absorption on a fully automated Gerstle MPS2 auto sampler split into a GCO, and then the volatiles were also separately confirmed running the same samples on another GCMS-MS. So all of these, we use a DB5 column because I don't like going between wax, et cetera, whatnot. It makes life complicated. A lot of the literatures on the, a lot of the U.S. literatures on the DB5, a lot of the Europeans and some of the other labs sometimes will use wax. But anyway, so if you're not familiar, GCO just basically takes your volatile through the GC column. It's going to split it, go to a pressure-regulated humidified sniffer port, and then it's also going to go to the electronic detector. Then we will take separate set of identical samples and run them on another instrument and confirm where they're lying out. So now, to get to the data, I'm going to warn you that these are all the statistics are just now coming in, and we're just now trying to figure out the best approach to analyze these data. So what this data set is a very rapid approach to look at quickly. I'm going to make sure I'm quick. The overall with the six varieties, and you can see with the exception of bricks, pretty much there's always a difference between the press. And this could be confounded because the muslin pressed fruit was frozen first, and then, like I said, handled very gently and carefully for human consumption and use. The other fruit that we passed through with nylon press, those are fresh fruit handled almost like in a commercial basis where we would treat and make the fruit immediately into a juice with a heated mash enzyme type process. So there's going to be differences, and we expect that. Some of them are all over the place and some are not. But what's very interesting is if you look at across harvest also for each and every of the Rabbit Eye, there was almost always, I'll warn you that the ABs through whatever Gs or Ds are in Rabbit Eye, and the next slide, it's all the same data set. So in this slide, you'll see the A's appearing, which happen to be the highest value for all of the phenolics and all of the anthocyanins, regardless of sample harvested, whether it was berries, juice, or press cake. And so the Rabbit Eye seem to have the highest, and that's in the medical and or human nutrition world a good thing. On the contrary, the Southern High Bush in this season as well. So, I mean, this could vary. We don't have enough data probably to unequivocally say yes or no. almost exclusively all the lowest quantified amounts of these compounds were found to be significantly lower, and especially in misty across both harvests. So, we're still analyzing the data, but if you just look at it across the row, even per variety, there's almost always a significant difference between harvest. And we all know if you've harvested many fruits and blueberries, just like a lot of them, there can be a 4 to 6-ish week window of harvest. And that first harvest, literally, the people will tell you they cannot tell the difference between a first harvest TIF blue and a last harvest TIF blue. They will think it's a different crop, a different variety. I mean, there's a lot of market variation in nature there, but and you'll see that in the data. So we're in the process also of pooling the data per variety, and we're pooling the data per variety type. In other words, the 3 SHBs and the 3 RABs combined. But I don't have that yet. So then we get to, what is blueberry flavor? Well, a patent in 71, 40-something years ago, said it's one linalool and a combination of potential 5 to 7 carbons, and here's a patent, and gee, we have blueberry flavor. But is it really that simple? So when you look at the GCMS specs and you overlay them for two cultivars, you'll see there's a cultivar that peak that's pointing out. And then what we do is we will take then through many, 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 many GCO runs, and we'll form these little boxes and say, gee, we're always getting a grassy, a blueberry, a floral here and there. But what does that really mean? Because sometimes they have a peak under them that we can see visibly, and sometimes they don't. And so what this is based on is running GC, MS, and FID, and olfactometry standards based on, unfortunately, the literature, which predominantly is northern high bush and low bush until a little bit more recently. And you'll see some of them line out and give us peaks where we think they should. More recently, these three articles really started to point out, hey, there's a lot of other oxidized linalools and a lot of other sesquiterpenes and monoterpenes that might be important in this picture. And then indeed, we start to see that when we line them up and run additional standards that, yes, we can find that certain peaks are definitely attributed to a specific compound. But the biggest blueberry flavor that we were perceiving, we still don't know what the heck it is. So if anyone could help me out with that, I'd really appreciate it. Then I have the mass spectra of it. I can tell you what the ions and everything are, but we cannot find it. So then we run all of our samples on a huge pasteurized study, and we're trying to deal with the same and line up all the MS, FID, GCO peaks and come up with something that we can then go back through the data with a fine-tooth comb and correlate it. And that is a work in progress. And so this is for clarified, unclarified. So in general, we've observed marked variation across the cultivars in a single harvest for almost everything. We haven't finished reviewing all the data. We're still in the process, and we still have a lot of GCMS data sets to go over. But the one good thing is that even though there's these marked differences, every commercial product that we tested when we were training sensory panels and doing our own training for the olfactometry was garbage compared to what we produced in the lab. So that was the good news. But to empirically show you that with data, I'm not there yet. So stay tuned. Any juicy questions?
Maybe one question.
John, it's my understanding that there's different steaming fibers with affinities for different classes of compounds, right?
Absolutely.
Does that imply that where you're getting an odor but no peak, it's just something that
Yes, absolutely, and it could be exhaustive. You could run a SPEMI PDMS and get a quite different data set than what we've started to move over to is the triple fiber. I forget the acronym for it. So it's got the divinyl benzene PDMS and So it's the triple fiber is what we're using here. So, yeah, you get a better spectrum of compounds, but indeed, you're going to miss sulfur compounds, for example, in your SPEMIs. So, there's like, you can run exhaustive volatiles and never get a full picture.
Do you have any opportunity to go back and
Oh, I still have the berries in the freezer. I'll send them to you. You can run them for me. Yes.
One. Quickly.
Quickly.